Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of No Acronyms Allowed, a podcast from the Florida Association of Community Health Centers. In each episode, we explore important topics and conversations about healthcare for all, peeling back the layers to make the discussion relevant to everyone. In this episode, we welcome Leah Mitchum from the American Cancer Society as we talk about the work she is doing with community health centers throughout Florida. Plus, we welcome one of our own to the conversation, CJ Ortiz, and we also do a little personal sharing of some of our stories with cancer. Stay with us for a great episode starting now. So for those of you, if you didn't get a chance to hear our intro, today we have the pleasure of speaking with Leah Mitchum from the American Cancer Society and one of our colleagues, Clarissa, but we call her lovingly CJ Ortiz, who is our Clinical Quality Programs Director. Boy, that's a mouthful. Sorry, CJ. And today we're going to talk to you a little bit about some of the things that we're doing with the American Cancer Society, but also learn a little bit more about them and dig a little deeper so you guys have an understanding of what the American Cancer Society can offer to your communities.
Leah, welcome. How are you?
Good morning. I am well. Thank you for having me.
We were just talking before we started recording about your running, and for listeners, you just ran a marathon last weekend that deserves a congratulations. We are both it's congratulatory, but it's also why do you do that to yourself? Why put yourself through that misery? But I'm guessing it's not misery to you.
Running is funny, and the marathon, probably more than any other distance, almost mimics life, right? It's
right.
A challenge. It's hard. Sometimes it hurts, but there are moments where it's brilliant and it's perfect and you don't want it to stop. So running is an outlet for me. It keeps me healthy and it kind of calms my mind. That's why I run.
I ran one race in my life. And I think those who know me would be surprised that I even ran one. And it was a 5K. It was in Greensboro, South Carolina, through the rolling hills of a college campus there. And a friend of mine said he would run it with me. He trained nothing for that day and was able to run it without issue. It ran in front of me. And it started a half hour late.
That's
and
tough.
That half hour just threw me because we didn't know it was going to start a half hour late. It was supposed to start at 8. So my mind was like, okay, 5 minutes to go, 4 minutes to go, 3 minutes. And then they say we're delayed. And that was the hardest 5K I had ever run in my life. And it was humid and muggy. It was July 4th in the South. And I was like, I don't know if I'll ever do this again. But that was a while ago, so maybe I'll give it another shot. But that was not a good entry into the world of races.
You had a lot of variables working against you there. A couple things. So weather, definitely that delayed start. Not only is that an adrenaline dump, but it impacts your hydration, your fueling. Then you had the rolling hills. So definitely give it another shot. And the 5K is hard. Everything speeds up with the 5K. So you know, be patient with yourself.
All right. I'm going to take you as the expert to make myself feel better about that then.
I am far from an expert, but could talk about running all day long. So if you ever want to do another podcast on running, I'm definitely your woman.
Good. So the American Cancer Society, I would suggest that's from Sheila's world of branding and communications. That's a very well-recognized organization, but I also guess that most people don't know even 1% of what the American Cancer Society actually does, right? How would you describe what the American Cancer Society is and what it does?
So I think you're guessing pretty accurately. We are a large organization, and I think much of what we do does go unnoticed in some ways. So I'll start by saying that first, we were founded in 1913. That's something that a lot of people don't realize, by 10 doctors and 5 lay people in New York City. And when we were originally founded, we were actually called the American Society for the Control of Cancer. And our founders, they were very smart. They were the pioneers. They were kind of ahead of their time. And they realized that in the early 1900s, there needed to be a good amount of public awareness about cancer, because at that time, a cancer diagnosis meant, sadly, near certain death. Now, since right. that time, we have expanded our reach as an organization. So we really started as a grassroots effort to kind of control the spread of cancer beginning in New York City. Fast forward to present day, though, and we are in 2/3 of the zip codes across the U.S. map, and we have more than a 110-year track record of proven wins and a history of not only being pioneers, but of being leaders in the fight against cancer.
So is it a mix of both awareness and advocacy and research and strategies on treatment? I mean, what are the efforts?
So a couple things here. I'll start with our mission. And the ACS is the leading cancer fighting organization. And our vision is to end cancer as we know it for everyone. And we carry out our mission by working to improve the lives of people with cancer by doing just exactly what you just said. We work through advocacy, research, and patient support. And we do that because we believe everyone should have the opportunity to prevent, detect, treat, survive, and thrive after a cancer diagnosis.
Absolutely. If we had to say that the state of the disease, right? How are we headed in the right direction, like we think we are, in terms of finding cures, in terms of expanding treatment options, in terms of prevention, early detection? Like, are the metrics in the right direction right now?
So we essentially started from a place of controlling cancer, right, to improving the lives of patients and families impacted by cancer. So we started small, we've expanded in size, we've expanded in reach, and through that expansion, yes, we've made a lot of great strides. So I'm going to give you some of our wins right here. We have helped increase federal funding for cancer research to $6.9 billion a year. We've also helped to influence a 33% decline in cancer mortality since 1991. And there's now a 68% 5-year survival rate for all cancer types combined.
Wow. You know, I wonder, and Sheila and CJ and Leo, of course, but you all will probably be much more intelligent about this than I am, but I have always wondered the little bit of the history that I know about what we call cancer. I've always understood that it was such a taboo disease for such a long time. And I never understood that. I never understood what made it taboo, that like you couldn't talk about it. You know, if you had cancer, that you, what were you supposed to do? Just sort of go away and die? And I feel like we live in a very different time now in terms of the disease, and that we do talk about it, and people are open about all aspects of the disease. But I've always wondered what made it a taboo thing, when it's like, well, you couldn't help it, right? I mean, it happens. Why did we not talk about it for so long?
I think one of the things that we do to kind of mitigate some of that is provide information and mobilize people around the mission. So we've really helped to try and create a world where cancer is detected earlier, where it's more manageable to treat, right? And hopefully because it's more manageable to treat, people may be more comfortable talking about their diagnosis and their journey. We've worked to influence a world where fewer people smoke and where more people survive cancer, again, hopefully contributing to the public's ability to identify, communicate, and have conversations about the disease.
I just think it's so, you know, we try to put a human sort of perspective when we do these podcasts. And I have a brother who passed away 3 years ago from cancer. And I think about, even with him, that we really didn't talk about in the 15 months or so of the disease, that he was aware of it. We really didn't talk a whole lot about it. And certainly what we knew was coming. And I think that, I sort of took the perspective that I want to respect what he needs, right? As the person that is dealing with this, the most, I guess. But I also thought, I wish that we could have talked about it, mm-hmm. right? I wish that we could have had more open conversation about it. But he wasn't there, right? He wasn't in that headspace. And ultimately for us as his family, that was what was most important, was, you know, let's make this what you need and want it to be. But I do regret that, right? That I wish that we could have had more discussion about it and talk about it. And even just to learn more about, like, I don't necessarily know how long he had symptoms, right, that he was ignoring. And then you think about genetics and, like, you know, are there things that I go through that he was going through that I should be thinking about more intently? So obviously there's so much to this conversation, but as we've been preparing to talk to you, that has just kind of kept creeping into my brain of how much we for a long time didn't talk about this disease, how much we do now, right? I mean, there's so much improvement from that perspective, but certainly we can't forget the human side of this, right? There's the clinical components that are going to help us get to things like a cure, but the human side of it is equally important. All right, enough 1,000%. Of my soapbox.
You know, Stephen, since you did mention CJ and I in this, I think I'll put it this way, because my sister is a cancer survivor. She's a breast cancer survivor. And she's also my identical twin. So yeah. I would say that it's not necessarily that they don't want to talk about it. I'd say that it's more or less how people react to it.
Sure.
I think it's more us, not them. It's more people don't know what to say, how to treat them. And you usually, human nature, you end up putting your foot in your mouth a lot. And I think I learned a lot by having those conversations with my sister, and just intuitively knowing when she just wanted to be treated like she was, nothing was wrong. That made her more comfortable. And I think it was just emotionally, she was going through her emotional train, and it was just exhausting for her to just have to battle the disease. I think I learned more about it than most outside of her husband, but I think she just wanted people to treat her normally. Like that helped her by just having normal conversations, having a normal day, and not having to focus solely on what was wrong with her. So I that's the only insight I can give you, but I think we're bringing this down a little bit. So I'm going to try and bring it
back. Yeah. Let's do that.
To his point, there are a lot of barriers when you talk about cancer and you talk about cancer research. I know we hear a lot of that in the media. You know, a lot of people donate a lot of money because of the stories that Stephen just told, that I just told. But what are some of the challenges that your organization faces? You know, people say they give a lot of money to cancer research. Why haven't we found a cure? So what are some of the barriers and the challenges that your organization faces?
Access to care and cancer screenings, and they go hand in hand. Let me start by kind of prefacing this by saying that prevention and early detection truly are paramount. And this is because nearly half of all cancer-related deaths could be avoided if we did what we know works, and that's to live a healthy lifestyle, to stop smoking if you smoke, and to get the recommended cancer screenings. But the reality is, this is not always an easy option for all patients, right? It's not necessarily easy to stop smoking. It's not always easy to keep every doctor's appointment. We live in a very busy world, right? Life happens and things get in the way. So that's probably the biggest challenge, is increasing access to cancer screening and increasing follow through with cancer screening. And this is so important because really, truly, for the majority of Americans, the best and most important way to reduce the risk for cancer would be to maintain a healthy weight, to be physically active on a regular basis, to eat a healthy diet, and to get the recommended cancer screenings.
So are from the cancer screening perspective, are there enough, for lack of a better term, access points, and it's just not enough people are taking advantage of them? Or are there deserts throughout the country where there just literally aren't enough providers, resources, actual screenings to meet the demand of the population? Or is it both?
It's really more access. And we started to talk a little bit about that, right? How do patients actually gain access to cancer screenings? But then also screening hesitancy is a very real dynamic, right? Sometimes maybe it's right. A little bit of procrastination. Sometimes it might be cost. Outside of these few things, then there's also system-related barriers too. So maybe hours of operation or policy and procedure that's just maybe inefficient and needs to be reworked or tweaked. All solvable problems, but it takes time, and that change does happen slowly.
It's one of those things where sometimes putting your head deep in the sand feels better in the moment than confronting what could be life-changing, right? And while the objective third-party person can look at that and say, no, don't do that, right? We are human beings who are emotion first, right? Intelligence second. So that may or may not ring true for me. No further comment on that one.
Understood.
I think that's where Stephen and I are probably opposite. I probably live that statement he just made, because I think fear is a huge factor in that. You don't want to know sometimes. I think you're afraid to find out, because then what? So I can see that, definitely.
So CJ, obviously our day jobs are focused all on community health centers. What's the connection? Help paint the story of community health centers and cancer screenings and what we're doing with the American Cancer Society. What does that look like?
Well, one of the many reasons why I love working with the community health center movement is the access to care aspect with the patient. And this is one of the barriers that we know to the prevention piece, as well as the early detection piece when it comes to cancer. And so that's why we always, you know, spread the word about Florida community health centers. Everyone has a primary care medical home with us, despite their ability to pay. And so that automatically helps with two of the major barriers. And then once the patient is established, there's a social determinants of health screening that takes place as well, which again, we just want to take down as many barriers as we can to your doctor's appointment, to making sure that you keep up with those annual exams that are so important, including the blood work that is taken. And, you know, just making sure that you keep up with your age appropriate screenings. And our community health center clinicians and care teams really drive this in their day-to-day operations to make sure that it stays at the forefront. And in addition to that, I would say one of the things that makes the Florida Community Health Center so special is that increased care coordination. And so we know that life is hard. And despite, you know, overcoming the fear and the access, there's maybe transportation barriers, there may be childcare barriers, there may be all kinds of reasons where we take the time to meet the patient where they are and walk through each and every one of those things to make sure that they always have a primary care medical home. And I love our clinicians. Of course, I'm biased, but they just really take the time to know their patients, to talk to them on a regular basis. And so the patient should be able to feel comfortable enough to speak up about absolutely anything that is going on with their life, including symptoms. And if we just create a space to make sure that we have that communication, that hopefully, you know, the patients have the opportunity to have access to care, to have prevention efforts. But as soon as something goes amiss, to say, you know, we noticed this, or, you know, I have this going on, and just being comfortable enough to talk that through and to get the care and treatment that they need.
So I always think, and this is going to be a naive question, but if I'm thinking it, I'm hoping at least someone else is thinking it. Like, the term cancer screenings, is that like this add-on thing that is something different, and you got to go to a different building and you got to have a different doctor? Or is it like, no, it's just part of your relationship with your primary care provider, part of the conversations that you have, maybe some follow-up testing? Like, is it integrated and it's an easy part of that relationship, or is it something totally separate and nebulous and we'll see you back in 6 months?
So with the Florida Community Health Centers, I can say it is a very organic thing that happens on a day-to-day basis. And speaking of social determinants of health and barriers, we want to be able to meet that patient where they are. And, you know, just have everything organic, hopefully in one building, you know, if not very close to. And so there's a lot of team-based care that goes on with our cancer screening. So as a patient, you're going to have an opportunity to talk to your provider, your primary care provider. But I can promise you, you're also going to have a few nurses talk to you about your cancer screenings, educate you on what those look like, go through all the details to get you in somewhat of a comfort zone with that. And then past that, you're probably going to have an opportunity to talk to a care coordinator over the phone and that type of thing. And so just as many opportunities as you have to address this organically within the community health center, the better. And so that's a lot about what our collaboratives are about, especially with the American Cancer Society. And we've just had such a long-term successful partnership with the American Cancer Society. We've worked on breast and cervical cancer, and we've worked on HPV together, and we've worked on lung cancer. And we had a colorectal cancer cohort pre-pandemic that was wildly successful. And so that is what led us to this latest 9-month learning collaborative. Of course, post-pandemic, the statistics were pretty alarming. And you know, based on certain services that couldn't happen and people needing to stay home. The Clinician Advisory Council and the clinicians on the roundtables immediately saw these statistics and were calling and emailing and saying, hey, CJ, we need a refresher course with the American Cancer Society. Even though we're still in a strange place post-pandemic, what if we did a refresher and started building back what we knew was successful in the past? And so that's how this particular learning collaborative organically came into play. And we just really appreciate the American Cancer Society and all they've done for us. And Humana really stepped up, and we were just on a call talking post-pandemic, and they said, what can we do to sponsor, to help? And so we brought up the cancer screenings, and it was quickly, within, you know, just a week or so, that all of this just, you know, all the pieces came together. We were like, okay, we know we have something that we need to address. We have Humana that will financially sponsor this. I called Leah and, you know, Maria, and they were like, absolutely, let's do this. And so we were able to just put it together fairly quickly, send that invitation out to that previous cohort. And we were off and running to improve those cancer screenings once again post-pandemic.
So I want to talk about what the cohort, like what they were doing right together, how, what they were learning and helping each other. And, but you know, on its face, I'm not surprised to hear that post-pandemic numbers were alarming, right? But as you dove into the data, what drove that? Was it just people were staying home and not doing screenings? Was it an increase in behaviors and activities that lead to cancer or can lead to cancer? What caused the alarming sort of increase in rates?
As with most pandemics, it was incredibly complicated, and right, there were so many moving parts on a daily basis. And so I could probably use the whole podcast to try to go through and try to figure out what happened when, but it really was a combination of all the things that you mentioned, Stephen. Of course, at the beginning of the pandemic, speaking of fear, you know, fear of cancer, we had a fear of something brand new to us. And, depending on which state you were in, you were probably mandatory isolated or voluntarily isolated or a combination of both. We went through a series of legislative and regulatory changes where certain services were paused or stopped, including if it wasn't emergency. So, you know, if you had a mammogram scheduled, it was more than likely rescheduled for quite some time. And so it was really a combination of all of those things to really look at those statistics to say, oh my goodness, you know, these are a laundry list of the consequences that we're left with after the pandemic.
Right. Which I guess the silver lining is to say that the things we were doing pre-pandemic were working.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, if a lot of those things stopped or changed once the pandemic hit and those rates are going up, that shows that we were on the right track doing things that were working. So, okay. So this cohort comes together, this cohort of providers in partnership with the American Cancer Society, with Humana. What are they doing? Like, what's the point of it? And how are they learning? How are they helping each other? What came of that?
So I'll start us off, Leah, and then I'll just let you pick it up, because she is our expert in this and can go through a lot of the details. But I will say, forming the cohort from the association perspective, the first thing that we wanted to do was to put that invitation out there to say we understand that this may or may not be a good fit based on where you are post-pandemic, but it is available to you. We had Palms Medical, Osceola, True Health, Tampa family and neighborhood reach out to say, I don't know if we're ever going to be as ready as we were before, but let's give this a try. Let's dig in. And with that, I would say, if we were to kind of timeline it, the first thing that we look at when forming this cohort is buy-in of the community health center leadership. And so we talk to the CEO of the community health center and their leadership team to really go through this and make sure that we have their buy-in. And it's in the form of a letter of commitment from them to say, no matter what happens, no matter how hard things are going to be in this coming year, we're going to dedicate ourselves and commit ourselves to this cohort. And from there, I'll let Leah take over and just kind of walk us through the 9 months and what all we learned and worked from.
Absolutely. And it's really been truly an honor to team up with FAC and with Humana. And we have been privileged to work alongside the teams that CJ just mentioned. Any ACS collaborative is essentially a learning community. That's what it is. And we bring together partners for a set duration of time with regularly occurring touch points. And the entire collaborative is designed really to help our partners close gaps in care, to improve cancer screening rates. In this instance, colorectal cancer screening rates specifically, we help them work through maybe reducing costs through best practice sharing and peer-to-peer learning. All of our field staff at the American Cancer Society have been trained by the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. So we're able to walk them through simple quality improvement planning that helps them kind of achieve the goals that they set for their clinic and improve cancer screening rates.
And so I know that we're still working on sort of understanding all that was learned and all that was developed out of this. Do you have a sense that there are some promising practices and strategies that were developed as part of this cohort of activity?
Without a doubt. And I'll also say that these partners that we're working with, they're absolutely critical to change, right? They're the ones that are on the front lines, and they are almost always the trusted voice to the patient. And this includes those that are at the front lines, that are at the front desk, that are answering the calls to the attending physician. That influence goes a really long way. And we at ACS, we just work to amplify that, right? We're very fortunate to be able to align with those clinicians and those teams and be able to provide them with the tools and the resources that they need to increase cancer screenings.
We all have someone we love, like the favorite lyric in our favorite song. You can't imagine life without them. Cancer screening tests can help keep the person you love around longer by detecting changes before cancer develops, or catch it early when it may be easier to treat. And many tests are available for free or are covered by insurance. It's time to sound like a broken record. Tell all your friends and family, I love you. Get screened. Visit cancer.org/get screened to learn more.
So, Leah, I trust that from this cohort with Florida's community health centers, there's probably some stuff developed that is going to have broader application for other initiatives, other strategies. Anything out of there that stands out to you that you're excited to leverage in other programs that providers can use?
So I will say that the teams that we worked with, all of them have made some great strides toward making change. And I think one of the most fundamentally important things that we do with these partners when we embark on any quality improvement process is that we kind of slow them down and help them evaluate their own numbers. And then after they evaluate their screening numbers for their particular location, they can begin to set a project goal, or what we refer to as an aim statement. But without that careful evaluation of their baseline numbers, they're not really able to set a project goal. So That's number one. And then we work with them around messaging. That's super important, especially like CJ said, around leadership messaging. That influence goes a long way. And then constancy of purpose. We really work hard to impress upon our partners that change takes time. It happens slowly, right? They're not going to perfect any process in 9 months, but hopefully what we've done is we've laid the right foundation. We planted the right seed so that change can continue to happen even after this collaborative adjourns.
It strikes me as interesting to sort of follow on from something you said a little bit ago, that it seems this work is going to be most effective when it's not just the provider in the room that is focusing on this, but it's the medical assistant, it's the front desk, it's the lab tech, where it is the culture of that this is why we're here, this is what we're doing, and any moment of penetration of the message, right, is good. And so if that comes from the MA who's taking your vitals right at the beginning, if that comes from the person at the front desk who's scheduling the follow-up, wherever that comes, right, that messaging is got to be consistent. Does that feel accurate?
100%. We're all rowing the boat in the same direction, and that's critical.
Yeah. So this is just, you know, probably 1% of your work, I would imagine. What are some of the other programs that might look similar to this or even not that ACS is American Cancer Society is part of?
So I'll start with three of our patient support programs, and many people are somewhat familiar. So I'll start by sharing about our Cancer Information Center and then our lodging and transportation. So we have a 1-800 toll-free number. It's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're available any minute of any day. If you contact 1-800-227-2345, we have trained cancer information specialists that will answer that call and help guide people through their cancer experience. And then in addition to our Cancer Information Center, we also can offer support as it relates to transportation to treatment or lodging for cancer-related treatment. And that comes in a couple different forms. So with our transportation support, we have a Road to Recovery volunteer program. These are volunteers that have been impacted by cancer in some way in their personal life, and now they've chosen to give back. And then we also have been able to provide transportation grants to some of our hospital partners to help offset the cost of transportation to treatment for patients. And I can also share with you that in Florida, to give you an idea of the Florida landscape, we were able to invest about $700,000 in 2023 alone in transportation grants to help support patients. And then in regard to lodging, we have a couple different ways that we can help patients here. Many people are familiar with our Hope Lodges. So our Hope Lodges offer a home-like, very nurturing environment. This is a free place for patients to stay if they're traveling for cancer-related treatment. We actually have 2 Hope Lodges in the state of Florida, and then we have 30 more throughout the United States and Puerto Rico. And in addition to our Hope Lodges, right, if you're traveling for treatment and you're not near a Hope Lodge, we also have a robust partnership with Extended Stay America. So this is a program through the partnership that ACS is able to offer either free or reduced rate lodging, up to 45% reduced rate lodging to patients that need to travel for their cancer treatment. And then in Florida in 2023 alone, because we believe this is so important, we've invested more than $150,000 in lodging support to assist patients. So That's 3 of our patient support programs. We also have what we kind of consider our peer-to-peer mentoring programs. And I can certainly share more about our Reach to Recovery program, which is specifically for breast cancer patients. This is a program that matches patients in active breast cancer treatment with patients that have survived breast cancer. So it pairs them up. It's patients talking to patients, sharing similar stories. And then we also have a couple other programs, our Cancer Survivors Network. So if you have been diagnosed with cancer, or someone close to you has been diagnosed with cancer, and you're a computer person and you're more comfortable going online for information, this is an online resource. It's a virtual community. You can navigate to the site. You can find discussion boards and chat rooms. And it's actually monitored by our ACS medical content team to ensure that what's being posted is accurate. We also have a new resource that many people are not aware of yet, and this is our ACS CARES program. And in this instance, CARES is an acronym, and it stands for Community Access to Resource, Education, and Support. And this is another free program. And what this program does is it carefully assesses the need of the actual individual patient, and then in turn follows up with curated follow-up resources individually tailored for that patient. So we do have a myriad of different patient support services and programs, and you can find more information about all of those programs at cancer.org.
So Leah, this might be an unfair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Unfair in that I'm putting you on the spot. What are you most hopeful about in the work that you do, whether that's a year from now or 10 years from now, what are you most hopeful about?
Bringing hope to the lives of patients and families impacted by cancer. You know, for a long time before coming to ACS, I worked as a social worker by trade and spent a good number of years with patients impacted by chronic disease and families impacted by that as well. And I was an advocate, and I was a source of information for those families. And I love that my role with ACS today allows me to continue that, maybe not with the patient directly, but with those that are caring for those patients. And I think that's what we do at ACS, is we instill hope, and we're problem solvers, and we look to find solutions. And I'm honored to be able to be in a role like that.
CJ, I want to ask you the same, because you're in the thick of it with you know, the best clinicians in the state of Florida. What are you most hopeful about when you think about the work that we're doing?
I am most hopeful, first of all, to know that I am in such a good place. I can't even call it work. You know, it's a career. It's what we do. It's our life. And just to be surrounded by all the right people. We never have to worry about cost or access or treatment or what have you. So all of those social determinants of health are taken care of. And doing this work, that's most of the battle. And just being able to know that you're at the right place at the right time to be able to assist, past the community health centers, to know that you have the right partners to reach out to. And when we looked at this and Humana said, so we know we have a problem, I wonder who we can call to help us with this. And I just immediately blurted out, probably talking over her, oh, that's the easy part with this one. We can just call the American Cancer Society and we'll talk through this. And that's exactly how it went. And so all of those things really take the heartburn out of so many challenges in life. And just being able to be a part of it is truly amazing. And of course, I will end the podcast today, never by saying goodbye, but just see you later, because we will quickly have an opportunity for an additional learning collaborative and be able to just continue to work with the American Cancer Society, be able to see the hope in our patients, to know that they have a primary care medical home to go to, and that they will just be met where they are and surrounded by hope and all of the right resources and tools to make sure that they have a healthy and happy future.
Can't really find anything better to end on than that. That's pretty good from both of you. So Leah, really appreciate you taking the time and being with us, and for the work that you do, let alone for being with us. But CJ, always appreciate you being part of this, but you're family, so our thanks is implied as much as it's said, right?